This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
January 1897. A young bride lies dead in a farmhouse in rural West Virginia. Her husband blames her heart. The doctor agrees. Case closed. But the dead woman's mother knows better. She kneels beside her bed every night for 4 weeks, praying her daughter will return and tell her the truth. And then the ghost appears. 4 nights in a row, 4 visitations, and a message that will change everything. He broke my neck. What happens next has never been repeated in American legal history. The ghost's testimony would be heard in court. The body would be exhumed, and a murderer would be convicted. Tonight, we descend into the Greenbrier ghost. Hello, friend. Welcome to the haunted bunker where mysteries hide. I'm Shane Waters, and Josh is here with me in the bunker tonight. We're traveling back to 1897 West Virginia, where a murdered bride refused to stay silent, even from beyond the grave. The Greenbrier ghost, a mother's prayers, a daughter's return, and justice from the other side. All right, friend, it's time to descend.
All right, well, let's set the scene. We're going to be in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, in 1890s rural Appalachian County. We're talking small farms, tight-knit communities where everybody knows everybody's business. Elva Zana Heaster.
Seriously?
Yep, that's the name.
Elsa Zana Heaster?
Elva Zana Heaster.
I would make people call me by my full name if that's my name every time.
Hi, I'm Elva Zana Heaster.
Yep, I wouldn't go by Elver, nothing shorter.
Right. Well, people called her Zona. Yeah, Zona. Zona was born around 1873. She was the daughter of Jacob and Mary Jane Heaster.
How come they get the most basic names they're like, we're going to name her Zona.
Before she ever met the man who would kill her.
Jesus.
Zona had a scandal. In November 1895, she gave birth to an illegitimate son. And in 1895, that was a big scandal.
I was thinking like got caught unchaperoned in the garden or something. But that is a scandal.
Is that a Bridgerton?
Yes, it is.
The birth ledger notes the father was, quote, supposed to be George Worldridge. A deliberate X appears beside Zona's name in the registry, marking the illegitimacy.
Jesus Christ, I know, not like, the registry. Damn.
The Woolridge family took the child. In 1890s Appalachian society, this was a serious stain on a young woman's reputation. Zona was damaged goods, and that may have made her desperate when opportunity came along. In October 1896, Zona accompanied her family to the blacksmith shop at Liv Zay's Mill. That's where she met him.
See, I think what gets me with pronunciation is even county of Greenbrier. Mm-hmm. How our family would say it would be Greenbrier.
Oh, yeah.
Like we would do that. Greenbrier.
That is so true. Yeah. I'm going to say that the next time someone says me a dirty
email. I feel like our minds say how our family would say it. Yeah. And then we're like, have to figure out, okay, now what's the correct?
Right.
Greenbrier.
Man, these names. Aramis Stribling Shoe. Everybody called him Trout.
I like that name, Aramis.
Everybody called him Trout.
It grows.
Well, Trout was a charming drifter with black hair and blue eyes. 11 to 14 years older than Zona. I feel like I keep calling her different names. Zona.
Landing zone.
Right. And he swept her off her feet. The courtship lasted only weeks, and they married on October 20th, 1896.
Couldn't be me. Weeks. Ugh.
Mary Jane Heaster, Zona's mother, despised Trout from the moment she met him. She sensed what she called dark secrets beneath his charming facade.
Ooh.
She begged her daughter not to marry him.
She didn't really have any other options.
Well, Zona married him anyway. 3 months later, she was dead.
Was not expecting that.
Right. Well, let's talk about who Trout Shoe really was.
I want to know if he got that name because he liked fish or if he had a bad smith.
Right. Because the charming blacksmith was hiding a lot. Born around 1861 in Mount Solon, Virginia, or Solon. It's S-O-L-O-N. But I think that's Solon.
Solon. Mount Solon.
He was born around Virginia. Described as a big, powerful man who was full of charm.
I would have married him too,
damn. Couple weeks, sounds about right.
I take back my weak things.
How tall was he?
Yeah, and a blacksmith. That means he got some arms. Ooh, rough hands.
His first wife was Allie Esteline Cutlip.
Poor thing.
They married in 1885 and had a daughter. Trout beat Allie so severely that local vigilantes dragged him from bed one winter night and threw him through the ice in the Greenbrier River as a warning.
Shit.
The marriage ended with Allie citing great cruelty in the divorce papers.
I know, especially for back then, I'm glad that the townspeople of that town did that.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time you hear like, oh, people just look the other way, not my business. But I'm glad that town's like, hell no, we ain't putting up with that shit around here.
Well, you know, something I've learned about the South.
They take care of their own.
If you are a white woman, a married white woman, they don't like when you get beaten.
Yo, yeah. White lady tears.
Yeah.
White lady tears.
You're black, though. They don't get that. They'll look the other way.
They would look the other way.
Yeah. Now, between marriages, Shu was convicted of horse theft and served 2 years in the state penitentiary.
Oh, her mama was right.
Horse theft, though. Can you imagine?
Well, that's like stealing a car these days.
Oh, yeah, I know. After his release, he married again. Wife number two was Lucy Ann Tritt. They lived together less than 8 months. She died in February 1895 under mysterious circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Shu's explanation, she fell and hit her head on a rock. As you do. Yeah. As
so
you
mysterious.
Do.
We were trout fishing, and that's how I got the name.
She fell over, and there was a rock there, and she hit her head and died.
Repeatedly.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Just like I fell into a doorknob.
Yeah.
All the time.
Other accounts suggest a brick fell on her head, or she fell through ice, or she was poisoned. Some historical accounts just vary on how she died.
Well, it seems like they just listed every way someone her age could die besides natural causes.
For sure.
Well, yeah. We know it wasn't a heart attack.
Right. Well, no investigation was conducted. So when Zona became wife number three, Trout Shoe had already established a pattern. Charming courtship followed by violence and suspicious death. Her mother sensed it. The neighbors didn't know. And less than 3 months after the wedding, the pattern repeated. January 23rd, 1897. It's a Saturday morning. Trout Shoe asked an 11-year-old neighbor boy named Anderson Jones, everyone called him Andy, to go to the Shoe house, collect some eggs, ask Zona if she needed anything from the store. But Shoe came back four more times that morning, increasingly impatient, repeatedly asking if Andy had gone yet. When Andy finally made the trip around 11 o'clock, he found Zona dead on the floor. Andy later testified she was stretched out with her feet together, one hand on her abdomen and the other was lying next to her. Her head was turned slightly to one side and her eyes were wide open and staring.
Where the hell would a rock be in the house?
Well, that was wife number two.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
You're mixing up all the deaths, Josh.
All the suspicious, mysterious murders.
Well, the little kid ran home. Dr. George W. Knapp. Boy, I'd like a last name, Knapp.
I would take every opportunity to take one.
Dr. George W. Knapp was summoned, but he didn't arrive for nearly an hour. And when he did, something was wrong. By the time Dr. Knapp arrived, Trout Shoe had already moved Zona's body upstairs. He had washed her wounds, highly unusual because women traditionally prepared female bodies.
Right.
He had dressed her in a high-necked dress with a stiff collar, and he had tied a large veil around her neck and a bow under the chin.
He was choking her.
Well, he probably had strangled her, and he used that to hide up the wounds. Yeah. When Dr. Knapp tried to examine the body, Shu went into inconsolable grief. He was crying, clutching Zona's head and shoulders, physically preventing the doctor from examining her properly.
Honey, you've been sitting there with her body for an hour.
Get over it.
Right. Man up, Trout.
Well, the thing is like, I understand grief. Completely understand that. But clearly, you're going to have to put that to the side at some point so that someone can do an investigation properly for your loved one.
Get them out of the room. We need to do this.
Yeah. Like, I understand you're going to have that opportunity. We have to respect what needs to happen now for your loved one. We need to get you out of the room.
This is what the funeral's for, honey.
Yeah. Dr. Knapp noticed slight discolorations on Zona's neck and cheek. But out of deference to the grieving husband, he conducted only a cursory examination. His verdict, death by everlasting faint. Heart failure.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, at such a young age.
But they called it everlasting faint.
That does sound magical, like a spell.
Well, it sounds very feminine.
Yeah, everlasting faint.
She fainted and just died.
Now it's heart failure, brain aneurysm.
Yeah, so now we would call heart failure. Case closed. Well, during the wake, Shu stationed himself at the head of the casket for the entire service. He wouldn't let anyone approach closely. He placed a pillow on one side of Zona's head and rolled up the sheet on the other, claiming it helped her rest easier. Multiple witnesses noticed something disturbing. Zona's head was very loose upon the neck and would drop from side to side when not supported.
Ooh, she ain't gone into rigor mortis?
Well, she would have. However, what that is suggesting is that she had been strangled so bad that she had a broken neck.
Ooh.
But nobody said anything out loud, but people were watching and remembering. Mary Jane Heaster took a sheet from the coffin. When she washed it later, the water reportedly turned red. Her daughter was gone, but Mary Jane knew something the rest of the world didn't. She knew who had killed her. Her daughter was buried, and no one was asking questions. So Mary Jane prayed. Every night for 4 weeks, she prayed that her daughter would return and reveal the truth. According to her sworn testimony, under oath and in a courtroom, those prayers were answered. Over four consecutive nights in late February 1897, the ghost of Zona Heaster Shoe appeared to her mother. The first night, and just keep this in mind, this is what she said happened in a sworn testimony in court. The first night, a bright light filled the room. An apparition took form, chilling the air. The ghost seemed reluctant. Mary Jane testified that the first time she came, she seemed that she did not want to tell me as much about it as she did afterwards. The second night, Zona told her the crucial detail. Her neck was squeezed off at the first joint.
Ooh.
By the third and fourth nights, the ghost provided a complete account of the murder. Zona allegedly told her mother sworn testimony that would later be read in court. Shu was angry that she hadn't cooked any meat for supper. Zona defended herself, listing what she had available: butter, apple butter, apples, jellies, pears, cherries. But Shu just flew into a rage. He took down all her nice things, packed them away, and ruined them. Then he grabbed her head and broke her neck.
All because she didn't have meat on the stove.
Doesn't that sound like a damn ass man?
After he didn't provide meat for them.
That sounds like...
It's your fault for not cooking out, not mine for not being able to afford it.
That sounds like one of my mom's ex-husbands.
Yeah.
We know which one.
The living one.
I almost spit out my coffee, Josh. I was thinking the exact same thing. Now, to demonstrate what happened, the ghost turned her head completely around until it faced backwards. Mary Jane testified, "When she went to leave me, she turned her head completely around and looked at me like she wanted me to know all about it." And Mary Jane could describe details of Zona's house, its rooms, its furniture, even a blood-stained spot near a loose floorboard.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters' 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
How she knew these things, she said, was simple. Her daughter's ghost had shown her. Mary Jane traveled to Lewisburg to meet with County Prosecutor John Alfred Preston. He was skeptical, obviously, but Mary Jane spent several hours in his office. Her persistence convinced him to investigate. So at that time, when she went to that prosecutor's office, her husband wasn't being looked at suspiciously.
Okay.
So what's happening is she feels like something was off. Like, she felt like something was off with how her daughter died, but it wasn't being investigated like that. You know, the coroner ruled that she had heart failure.
Right.
But then she said that she was being visited by her ghost and was being told how she had died. And so she felt so strongly that she was being given these clues that she ended up going to this prosecutor.
God, this is like the Christmas Carol.
That's multiple exactly what I thought. Yes. Ghost,
except this time it's to solve a murder.
But you know, back then, like, that would be so out of the ordinary. Like, you know, now there's ghost shows and stuff like that. So, you know, like,
right,
ghosts are more commonly talked about.
I believe the Christmas Carol was written by then, possibly. I'm not sure exactly when it probably was written, but...
But can you imagine, like, showing up to the prosecutor's office? Like, you're already a grieving mom. You're trying to get them to take you seriously.
Right.
But also, it would be so easy for the prosecutor to just dismiss you as a grieving mother.
Yeah.
Like, you're grieving. You, of course...
Well, they could have put her in an asylum.
Oh, yeah.
You lost your mind. Lock her ass up.
Yes.
So, I mean, she was...
So she had a lot to lose.
I believe her, because, I mean, she had everything to lose.
Yes.
They could... They put women up, locked them up for nothing.
It was
back
her
then.
Word versus a man.
Yeah.
And when you're saying a ghost is telling me, that's damning, especially when a doctor has already ruled that
he must have been incredibly unliked. Because they're like, sure, anything to get his ass off the ghost? Streets.
Yeah,
sure.
That or he was incredibly good looking and all the men who were in power are like, let's put his ass behind bars.
He's too purty.
Yeah, my wife keeps talking about his nice looking hands. All right, so Mary Jane spent several hours in that prosecutor's office, and eventually her persistence convinced him to do an investigation. Preston dispatched deputies to re-interview witnesses. He personally visited Dr. Knapp, who admitted he had not made a complete examination, and Preston discovered troubling information about Trout's shoe, the horse theft conviction, the divorce citing cruelty, the suspicious death of Lucy Ann Tritt. Preston ordered the body exhumed. On February 22, 1897, 1 month after Zona's death, her body was exhumed and transported to the Nickel Schoolhouse. Three physicians conducted a three-hour examination. Trout Shoe vigorously complained, but was required to attend. During the procedure, he whittled nervously, becoming visually agitated when doctors examined the head. And that's when they found it. The discovery was published in the Greenbrier Independent, and it said, the neck was broken and the windpipe smashed.
Jesus.
On the throat were the marks of fingers, indicating that she had been choked. The neck was dislocated between the first and second vertebrae. The ligaments were torn and ruptured. The ghost had told the truth.
Oh my God. Thank God it was February and it was, you know, cold.
Oh yeah, I know. Zona's neck was broken at the first joint, exactly what her spirit had allegedly revealed to her mother. Trout Shoe was arrested and charged with murder. The trial began June 22, 1897 at the Greenbrier County Courthouse in Lewisburg. Judge J.M. McWhorter presided. Prosecutor Preston was brilliant. He made Mary Jane his star witness, but deliberately avoided mentioning the ghost during direct examination. He wanted her to appear sane and reliable. His questions focused entirely on physical evidence. The Greenbrier ghost was never mentioned by the prosecution and played no part in the case against Shue. So how did the ghost testimony get into the record? The defense made a critical, tactical error. Hoping to discredit Mary Jane, they cross-examined her extensively about the ghost visitations, trying to characterize her visions as a mother's ravings. And it backfired spectacularly. So these are some exchanges from the trial transcript that I'll read to you.
Ooh.
So the defense attorney asks, I have heard that you have had some dream or vision which led to this post-mortem examination. Mary Jane replies, they saw enough themselves without me telling them. It was no dream. She came back and told me that he was mad, that she didn't have no meat cooked for supper. The attorney pushed. And was this not a dream founded upon your distressed condition of mind? Mary Jane says, no, sir, it was no dream, for I was as wide awake as I ever was. The attorney tried again. Now, I would like, if I could, to get you to say that these were four dreams and not four visions or appearances of your daughter in flesh and blood. Mary Jane's response, I am not going to say that. I am not going to lie. When asked if the Lord had sent the ghost, she replied, the Lord sent her to me to tell it. I was the only friend that she knew she could tell and put any confidence in. I was the nearest one to her. Her answers were described as measured, consistent, and unnervingly certain. Shue testified in his own defense. The newspaper noted he was very minute and particular in describing unimportant incidents, yet denied pretty much everything said by any other witnesses. Which is always a telltale sign that you're not telling the truth when you're like, oh, yeah, I remember exactly what I did yesterday. I went here, here, and at 2:45, I was there.
Oh, yeah.
But what did you do in the afternoon? Oh, I think at some point in time, I went to the post office. Right. Know? Okay. Well, some shit's going down. Yeah. While awaiting trial, he had freely discussed his lifelong goal of having 7 wives. Okay. Disgusting. Zona had only been his 3rd. He had already secured a promise of marriage from another woman. Because the defense, not the prosecution, had introduced the ghost testimony, it remained in the record. The judge couldn't instruct the jury to disregard it. The jury deliberated for 1 hour and 10 minutes. Guilty of murder in the 1st degree.
Good.
The jury couldn't agree on the death penalty, so the sentence was life imprisonment. Shue was transferred to the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville. He died there on March 13th, 1900, during an epidemic. He was buried in an unmarked grave, and no one attended his funeral. Did Zona's ghost truly appear to Mary Jane Heaster? Well, skeptics point out that the same newspaper announcing Zona's death contained another ghost story, possibly providing narrative inspiration. A determined mother might have created those details from what she knew of Shue's violence, but Mary Jane did accurately describe a house that she never visited. The ghost's account matched the autopsy exactly, which they did not have CSI.
Right.
So,
and I doubt that her mom, a poor woman, would back then know, like, it was on the first ligament, yeah, you know, like the anatomy of a human neck.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, even, I feel like most people, even if you are like a true crime watcher, you may not even know, like, if you strangle someone,
right,
where that might show up. So for her just to come up with that, highly unlikely.
Yeah, and to remain calm while, like, especially yeah, back then, a woman to be testifying was a rare thing. And first, but secondly, if she were lying, she would have had signs of, you know, nervousness, yeah, or shaky voice.
It's so much to lose.
Yes.
And if she was lying, good for her.
Right.
Like, so much to lose. Wanted justice for her daughter.
Even if she didn't see the ghost, mother's intuition is never wrong. Yeah. She's new.
And that's the thing, like, if it, and that's the thing, like, in my mind, if the ghost wasn't real, maybe it was her mind, like, drawing the conclusions.
Yeah.
You know, like, this doesn't make sense. And, like, because when you dream, I don't know if you do this, like, you solve problems. Yeah. I do it. So, like, her mind could have done it for her, you know, and, like, solve the problems. Now, that does not explain how she miraculously would have known the layout of the house.
Right. The no meat.
Yeah.
See, I wish he, you know, when he did get sentenced, would have been like, yeah, I did, because yeah, she didn't have any damn meat.
But, you know, these people, they're like, oh,
bastards.
Innocent. Now, Mary Jane, as I mentioned, did describe the house exactly, and she had never been there. The ghost's account matched the autopsy exactly. And for 20 years until her death in 1916, Mary Jane told the same story, the same way, and never wavered. Today, a State of West Virginia historical marker stands on Route 60, and it reads, "Interred in nearby cemetery is Zona Heaster Shue. Her death in 1897 was presumed natural until her spirit appeared to her mother to describe how she was killed by her husband, Edward. Autopsy on the exhumed body verified the apparition's account. Edward, found guilty of murder, was sentenced to the state prison. Only known case in which testimony from ghost helped convict a murderer."
Wow.
Now, that's the official state marker and the only known case.
That's a really cool case.
I know.
I've heard the term, I've heard the name Greenbrier Ghost.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't aware of,
yeah,
a ghost helped solve her own murder.
Well, whether you believe Mary Jane truly received those supernatural visitations, or whether it was a determined mother who used the language of the supernatural to achieve that justice for her daughter, one thing cannot be disputed. She refused to let her daughter die forgotten, and because of her, Trout Shoe, the man who wanted seven wives, never claimed his fourth victim.
And he died literally forgotten. You said no one was at his funeral.
No. Karma. So I love that. And I love
love that for her.
Yes. And I include that last bit because it's such an important part of the story. I feel like it can be forgotten that if it wasn't for the mom putting herself out there when it's a crazy story and going to court and saying, yep, my daughter came back to me.
Mm-hmm. Please don't lock me up.
Yeah. And I of course she wants to get that, that justice for her daughter. But also she prevented other women from being murdered. Yeah. So, that's such an important piece. There were other women who survived, and now there are descendants from those women who survived who are now walking this earth. Yeah.
It wasn't for this ghost.
So, that's such an important piece that I just wanted to bring up.
That's one thing I like to do is at least just visualize the strings that connect stories.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that ghost and that mom, all those four women that could have died, all their ancestors, hundreds of people alive today because of a ghost.
Well, you just never know. Everything's just so connected.
I've heard of ghosts having sex with people, but not saving people's lives. And that is just so heartwarming around this Christmas time.
Well, Josh, for my shit fire segment, I have a good story for you. You ready?
The owl that wanted to be a Christmas tree topper.
Yes. Did you see
You forget how good my eyesight is.
Oh, my gosh.
I was sitting over here ooh, that sounds like a cute little story. I'm going to have to just print
on one side. Have you heard about it?
No, I just read the title.
Good God.
I mean, I'm psychic.
Yeah. I saw a ghost. It came to me. Owl came to me and said, I want to be a Christmas topper, Shane.
Well, and I've used an owl as a Christmas tree topper in the past, too.
Have you?
So I was like, oh, how cute. I almost bought one this year, too.
Oh, that's funny. All right. So, my shit fire segment. Well, today's story, we're traveling to Arlington, Virginia. It's December 2024, so last year, just a week before Christmas and all through
a year ago.
It was, yes. The Burgon family, probably. We're talking about a mom, a dad, kids, dog, whole deal. They've got their Christmas tree up, star on top, presents underneath. It's a Wednesday evening. Mom's in the living room taking care of the baby. Everything's quiet. Everything's normal. But this particular Wednesday night was different. Around 7 o'clock, Savannah starts hearing something strange from the fireplace. Scratching, rustling. The family dog starts howling nervously.
We're familiar with that. Growing up with the fireplace, birds would always fly down that thing.
Well, Savannah figures it's probably the wind. Maybe something got stuck in the chimney. She walks into the kitchen to check things out. And there it is. Shit fire. A full-sized owl.
I'd be so excited.
And it's sitting on her baby's high chair.
Oh no. Put the dog up.
Right. Just staring at her. The thing came down the chimney like a feathered Santa Claus. Except instead of presents, it brought chaos. Savannah's standing there frozen. The owl's looking at her with those big yellow eyes. The dog losing its mind. Betty White would be freaking the F out.
Oh, yeah. What the hell is that?
Yeah. It's a toy.
What kind of dog is that? Oh, God.
Are you replacing me? The kids hear the commotion and come running in. And that's when the owl makes its move.
God.
It takes off from the high chair, swoops across the living room, silent, because owls don't make noise when they fly, in case you didn't know, and lands directly on top of the Christmas tree.
Aww.
The tree already had a star on the tree, but the owl didn't care. It knocked that star right off, settled itself down, and just sat there like it belonged.
Sup.
Well, shit fire and save the matches, the owl just made itself the new Christmas tree topper. The kids? Not scared at all. They were giggling when they arrived.
Christmas magic.
Yeah, they thought it was the greatest thing that ever happened. The parents call animal control. Sergeant Spencer Murray from the Animal Welfare League of Arlington gets the call. He's expecting maybe a small bird, a sparrow, maybe a pigeon. He walks in and there's a full owl perched on top of their Christmas tree like an ornament. He later said it was one of my favorite calls I've ever responded to.
How cute.
The owl had tired itself out from all that flying around, so Sergeant Murray waited for the right moment and safely captured it in a net, and they released it outside and the owl flew off in the darkness. The Animal Welfare League later sent the family an owl-shaped tree topper as a gift.
Aww.
Since the real one flew away.
Now I want to go buy that one.
You should. In Savannah, she told the reporters, "I'm like very personally sad that there's no Hogwarts enrollment letter that came with it.
That would be like, oh.
So somewhere in Arlington, Virginia, there's an owl who broke into a family's house through the chimney, sat on a baby's high chair, knocked the star off a Christmas tree to claim the spot for itself, became a viral sensation, and then just flew off into the night. I thought that was such a good story.
That's cute.
I know.
Yeah, the family wouldn't have been able to touch the owl to even
remove that's true.
It. Like, you can't.
They'll probably say it.
You can get arrested if you try touching a bird of prey. Owls are, it is creepy how they fly. Other birds, when they fly, you'll hear their feathers rustling, especially when they land or take off. But an owl's feathers make no noise. So when they, you'll never hear that, you know, sound. So if you're walking in the woods, you'll hear it land on the ground like a little thud. And you're like, what's that? And you turn around, there's a big gray owl behind you. It scares the piss out of you.
Well, I also think it's funny because if you see an owl on a tree, they have that real thick neck look.
Oh, yeah.
And then it'll like turn its head and it looks like it can turn its head all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Their little neck is so funny. It looks like just
it looks
little,
like Kim's.
Little stick.
Just right.
Real thick.
Under the feathers. I like when I go hiking in the winter when there's snow to look for birds of prey prints in the snow. You'll see like a little small bird's footsteps, and then you'll see just in the snow a pattern of spread giant wings around the small bird. A giant hole where the feet grab the little bird, and then just it's like one swift print. They just land, grab it, and go.
That's funny.
I'm always like, oh, something got eaten. But pretty wings.
Right. All right, guys. Well, don't forget to catch us over on our bonus episode. We'll be right there right after this. And send us a postcard. And if you see something out in the wild that you think that we'll like, you can also send that to us. Just
yes.
Not something illegal. Well, you can send us a postcard at P.O. Box 690 in Wabash, Indiana 46992. And that's in the show notes as well. You can send us any non-poisonous sealed snacks, and we will try them on the air just for you.
Yes.
We like to try new things. All right. Well, we'll see you over on Unmasked right after this.
Bye. Bye.
A young bride murdered over a supper argument, a mother who wouldn't accept the official story, and a ghost who returned to set the record straight. 127 years later, it's written on a highway marker, official state acknowledgement that something unexplainable happened in Greenbrier County. Some mysteries aren't meant to be solved, they're meant to be felt. And some voices, silenced by violence, find a way to speak anyway. The lights are dimming, the bunker door is closing. But the mysteries, they're just getting started. I'm Shane Waters. Stay curious, stay skeptical, and stay a little bit scared. Good night, friend.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.